You're listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY, Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM, and in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere at xray.fm. Radio is yours. What is success? What does it mean to be successful? Is it all about money? Or is it all about love, fame, attention? Or is it some secret other thing that we've yet to explore? I'm Brianna Wheeler, and I want to know what success means to the people that I think are successful. Because success can mean so many different things to so many different people. So let's discover a few new ways together. This is Success Stories. Hello, and welcome to Success Stories, a 30-minute radio program and accompanying podcast featuring Portlanders who have found success in unique and inspiring ways and have shifted Portland's economic, creative, and cultural landscape in the process. Today, I'm talking to writer, producer, storyteller, comedian, and nightlife fixture extraordinaire, Mix Dahlia Bell. Dahlia, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me on and hyping me up.
Well, I'm a fan, legitimate fan.
I mean, I want to meet this Dahlia person now.
Yeah, let me tell you all about her.
Yeah,
she's right. I heard that she's from Orlando, Florida, but I have no idea how she ended up in Portland, Oregon. Help me understand.
It was a trip. My dad worked in advertising in the 70s and 80s. So, yeah, I was born in Orlando, Florida, elementary school in Evansville, Indiana, middle school in Levittown, Pennsylvania, high school in Wisconsin Rapids, Wisconsin, and then I moved out to Portland.
Where would you say you grew up? Midwest?
Yeah, I guess because I did that one twice. Yes, did South once, Midwest twice, East Coast once, West Coast now. So, yeah, I guess the Midwest wins.
When does Dahlia end up in Portland, though? What brought you to Portland?
At the age, the ripe age of 21, came out here as a musician. It was during one of Portland's big bubbles. So, couldn't resist the clarion call of broke musicians still somehow able to pay rent.
Oh my gosh, do you remember those days?
Yeah, it was amazing. Everyone I met was like a studio musician or like some sort of session musician. I'm like, how do you eat?
Right.
How does that?
And how does everyone have like a craftsman house with three bedrooms and you pay what?
Yes, thank you.
$800? Yeah.
Although I will also give us, sorry, I have four cats. So they will all be visiting throughout this interview.
Love.
Yeah. Also, like, I miss the days when hardly anyone had a car.
Right.
Like, it was an anomaly to meet someone with a car. And now I'm part of the problem, too. But yeah, those were the days.
What you're talking about is, like, exactly... Well, I came to Portland around the same time. I moved here in 2006.
So about 3 years after.
Yeah, that same, like... That bubble moment of like being able to get a super cheap house that has. I moved here from Los Angeles also. So when I tell you,
oh, wow.
It was like coming to par, like, what? I can park in front of my own house? Are you kidding? Yeah. Or I don't have to own a car at all. What? I can get on public transportation? Get out of here. Bike lanes? Get out of here.
That's so true from LA. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also, the pace is a lot more chill up here.
For sure. For sure. So you said that you came up here, kind of, you're part of that bubble. It's that artistic moment that was happening in the early mid-aughts where everybody was moving up here. You were a session musician? What instruments do you play? What band were you in?
So I was not personally a session musician. I was very arrogant. Yeah, so I was going to join a band and be a superstar. No, I mostly played bass. I was in a band called Secrets in the Salt. Don't look them up, but yeah.
Did you hear that, listeners? Definitely don't do that. Yeah. Do you still play music?
I've gotten back into it. I ran out of ways to be gay, so I recently took up a modular synthesizer.
Oh, snap. New levels. Yeah. New levels of gay. Yeah. Was it always
the instrument of my people?
Oh my god. Dun, dun. See, that's why you get paid the big bucks.
Yeah.
Was it always like from childhood till you moved to Portland, was it always in the cards that you were gonna be a performer?
I'm a theater kid.
Yeah.
I started theater before I started school.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. It's all I know. It's the only thing I know how to do.
So it was. Is there a modality that you preferred before comedy? Like, you said theater kid, so were you super into acting, musical theater? Where in theater did you think you're...
I really thought I was into acting. It's complicated. Mm. I have a complicated relationship with the theater. Because, yeah, I realized in college a large part of my motivation behind theater was that I didn't have to be me.
Mm.
So I could just take on a character and just be that person for however long that production is running.
Right.
But then, you know, my brain went a little cuckoo and couldn't do it anymore. And yeah, now I prefer being me. So yeah. That's what I'm paid to do.
Thing. Yeah, that's right. So you talk about the idea of like being able to hide inside of a character and then being like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. And I know that your identity specifically, I mean, obviously it has to inform a lot of the material that you create. So I'm wondering how that identity has shaped your performances from your first performance till now.
Yeah, I guess it's interesting because when I first started, it was more like a self-deprecation sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, asking a lot of the audience can't hear my air quotes, but quote unquote, you know, meaningful sociological questions and all that sort of stuff. Whereas now, I don't claim to have answers. I'm not trying to find answers. I'm trying to find how all this nonsense can still be amusing and celebratory.
Right.
So I've gotten a lot sillier, I think, over the years.
Right. Right. Were you a little bit more like iron-fisted when you first got on stage? What did your advocacy play in like much louder at first?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right on.
That's how I got myself mislabeled as an activist. I don't think anyone would accuse me of that had I started out the way I roll nowadays.
Right. How do you roll nowadays?
Oh, my material's just ridiculous. It's about whatever. I just think of a funny thing and I'm like, I will find an excuse to say this in front of other people. So
love.
That's the mission nowadays.
As it should be. So I write for the Willamette Week, and when you won Funniest Person, I was very salty about that. But I want you to know that I have a very legitimate reason as to why.
Okay.
I was bratty for years about these Funniest Five lineups. They're so cis, they're so white. It's almost, and it does vacillate between like a being led by women and being led by men. But for like a couple of years back to back, it was just dudes on dudes on dudes on dudes. Yeah. And I was so over it and I was making so much noise.
Which is my favorite movie, by the way.
Hey, oh, come on, terrestrial radio. The kids, think of the kids listening. dudes on dudes on dudes on dudes. Dudes. And I was being very bratty about it. Very bratty out loud. And then the year that you're named Funniest Person, I don't get to interview anybody because I'm on a book tour. I had been waiting for you. You were like my golden ring. You were like that just out of my reach, and you just slipped right through my fingers, and I was very salty about it for a very long time. So it's wonderful to be able to talk to you about that now.
Yes. And congratulations on the book tour.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. It's old news, but
it still counts.
Thank you. Big takeaway was that I didn't get to interview Migdalia Bell. I was kind of angry about it. And she was on the cover. And they put a black woman on the cover and they didn't tell me. Oh my goodness. I could have fought somebody. That's so true.
I mean, you just had a flashback.
Wanted that cover so bad. Okay, that said, you tell me about navigating an overwhelmingly white male cis comedy scene in Portland.
Yeah, I guess, truthfully, and I don't even know that I did this on purpose. Like, I don't aggrandize myself that much to say it was a vision. I just don't. Basically. Yeah, as it turns out, to succeed in a craft or a field, you don't have to do the things you're supposed to do. I would not have assumed that. But yeah, as it turns out, you can just make it up as you go along.
What do you see as the markers of success in the comedy scene? Because obviously you've got your own specific markers for your success. What are they?
Yeah, I think for me, and honestly, it was, I don't remember which comic first brought this to my attention, so forgive me, comedy gods, but success is ultimately still being able to do this. Mm-hmm. Like, if you think about art in general, but definitely the art of stand-up comedy, somehow I continue to convince people to pay me money to get on stage, speak loudly into a microphone at their patrons about nonsense for up to an hour. Like, I'm just the problem. Like, I should be getting kicked out of the bar. But instead, they got paid to be there, and they gave me a free meal. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh my gosh. So,
yeah.
The marker of success is the stage time and a free meal?
Right. Letting me do this? That's amazing.
It really... I was foaming at the mouth when Hannah Gadsby's special came out, because I was so, 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 so excited. How does, like, when you look at these markers of success for you, you're thinking like, man, I'm just happy to be here. It's great to be here. But then I look at you like kind of smashing doors open. Do you look at that and be like, wow, that was a moment of tremendous success for me? Or does it kind of fall into the I'm just happy to be here category?
So something happens, and people don't really talk about this part when people do, like, the special or whatever. A lot of people come to me now, especially, like, newer, younger comics, and they're so excited and awestruck, and there's this mythos around having been on Netflix. Mm. And, you know, multiple people who have been on Netflix in sometimes significantly more major ways than myself. And they're every bit as broke as I am. We're grinding just as hard.
Yeah.
So there is the momentary feeling of success. And part of that is how they hype you up. Mm-hmm. Like, they flew me out to London business class to shoot this special with a piece of paper that said that it was of such cultural importance for me to be in London that I should just be allowed into their country, no questions asked, for a minimum of 14 days. Right? He was of that great of importance. So, yeah, for approximately 2 weeks, I felt super important. I was like, I'm a star. The whole world is different for me now. I can pay off all the debt I've accumulated over the 12 years I've been doing this. And then, then I went back to, like, producing and, like, going to these little bar shows and whatnot. And no one knows who I am. No one cares. So, yeah, it's a weird shock to the system.
Right. Right. High highs, low lows, right?
Yeah. It's not even that low of a low. That's the thing. Like, it feels lower now. Because I'm like, I'm not on an international tour. I don't have this deal. I don't have that deal. Blah, 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 blah. But I'm right back to where I was at the point at which Hannah Gadsby hand-selected me to be on a special that I got flown out to London to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't feel as big now as it did back then.
Right. Right. What do you think the fiercest roadblocks have been in your evolution to kind of like to where you're at now in this like... happy to be here, feeling it. What have been the like the worst challenges?
I would say, okay, I'm going to give the right answer, and then I'm going to give the way too serious answer. So the right answer is my ego. My ego has been my biggest obstacle.
Well, that's deep.
Yeah, just not wanting to do things if I don't want to do them. I'm like, nope, that's... I was very bratty when I started comedy. And I'm still very bratty, but I keep it to myself a lot more. But I think... truthfully, I would say that was probably my biggest obstacle from the time I started comedy to where I am now.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest obstacle now is living in... the era of Trump 2.0.
Right.
And I don't want that to be the case, and I don't want to... I'm not the sort of person who wants to walk around being like, oh, it's because I'm this demographic, or I'm that demographic, or whatever else. Or I want to say, oh, it's because I'm irresponsible, or I didn't do this thing, or I didn't do that thing.
Right.
But then I'm also looking at my technically more successful friends... who did do that thing and are doing this thing and, you know, are doing the daily grind constantly, nonstop, generating content and whatnot. And in some ways, they're still not as successful as me, if you were to ask them.
Isn't that funny?
So at a certain point, I'm like, okay, maybe there is something... in addition to me not playing by the rules that might be holding me back. And, you know, I am very defiantly me. And that is being said as a middle-aged black transgender woman. I don't fit into... some readily digestible, sellable, consumable for someone else to make money off of.
Right.
So, yeah, it's hard to find deep-pocketed investors.
No kidding. Preach! Well, speaking to that, the idea of, like, you as an entertainer... very iconoclastic, very unique, almost niche. But I experience your material as feeling very evergreen and relatable. Like, yeah. Through and through. As a person who's out in these streets, what would you like to see more of in our nightlife? Like, what do you see as missing from, like, the whole landscape of nightlife entertainment? What would you like to see more of?
People.
Right.
Yeah. Portland's gotten very sleepy since the pandemic. And I think we're doing a little better. People are starting to get out a little more. But, yeah, getting a room sold out was not as complicated. Say 2019.
Right.
And now the only shows that I really see where it's like truly packed out are honestly the drag shows. Drag and burlesque is killing it in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
But stand up and even music, I would say, aren't getting quite the same attendance.
Right. Right, Queer Nightlife is popping off. That's true.
So yeah, we do the most.
I know that the Portland City Council, there's this like conversation that kind of floats around every once in a while about like a director of nightlife, a director of entertainment in the PM. I want to ask you, because I kind of feel like you're an expert. Do you think that would you run for Nightmare? Nightmare?
You know, call it Mayor of the Night, yes. Yes, I would absolutely run for Mayor of the Night.
But would you run for Nightmare?
That doesn't sound good. That I don't like that.
I see it for you. I see it for you.
Mayor of the Night wears a boa, like just the largest purple and black boa you've ever seen. Nightmare strangles people to death with that boa, and that's a different look.
That's the difference. Yeah. That's how you can tell them apart. That's it right there.
Yes.
Yeah, speaking of queer nightlife, like who out here do you love right now?
Oh, this is so loaded.
Ooh, I know. There I'm getting so you in trouble.
There are too many people I would have to name. I'm not touching this one.
Okay, best show that you've seen recently, then.
The best show would be Hunk. That show was just something truly else at Blackwater, hosted and produced by Exoskeleton, who I do absolutely adore. So, yeah, I will admit, I adore Exoskeleton, Khadijah Diamond. Yes. Got to give a shout-out to Savannah Bennington. Portland nightlife. so extra. So glorious.
Very that.
But my only competition for being such a mess. she does it sober, and that's wild. I have excuses.
Oh my goodness. If a stranger comes up to you, a fan, somebody you don't know comes up to you out of the blue, wants to find the success that they perceive you have, what is the advice that you give them? Dahlia, oh my god, you're my favorite comedian, I want to be just like you. What advice do you give me?
I have honestly said this to so many people. They're like, oh my god, I wish I could do comedy. How do I get started in comedy? I'm like, you don't. Just don't. Don't do that. I highly recommend you avoid that, if at all possible. But yeah, if someone is insistent, and they just absolutely must do this to themselves, just be true to yourself and don't stop doing that. And I guess it eventually pays off, maybe, but don't quote me on that.
Right.
I'll deny having ever said this.
Yeah, it's not like there's an audio record of it or anything.
Check.
Not at all. I love this idea. Like, the whole thesis of this show is that there is no one definition of success, that there's no one way to succeed, and also that success is not an end game. Like, there's not the bottom of a ladder and a top of a ladder, and at the bottom is failure and at the top is success. There's all of these, there's not even a ladder, it's just life. We're just kind of moving through life in these ways, right? So it can mean so many different things, and it can get wild. Like, it doesn't have to mean money. It certainly doesn't have to mean a full bank account.
No.
I mean, it would be nice, but...
Not if you're a comic. That's an. I mean, yes, it would be nice. I would love money. If you have some, you could. I could use some. But.
Shout out to the deep-pocketed adventurers.
Yeah, comedy, it's not notorious for paying well in terms of money.
Yeah, it's kind of
like,
a one in a million.
There's a handful of people that everyone knows of, and they're like, oh, comics make millions. And it's like, no, those five comics make millions.
Right, right.
The other 5,000 comics touring the country every single day of the year have other jobs.
Yeah, yeah, get you a nice city job. Get you a nice government position there, and then just ride high.
So many substitute teachers.
Substitute teachers
and sex workers.
I did not know about the sex worker park. I did know about the substitute teacher
park. Yeah, because it's the same job.
Wait, teaching? Or teaching in comedy? Or sex work in comedy?
Sex work in comedy.
those streams crossed in a weird way in my mind, and I really had to untangle them. Not on this all ages show. So what is the next big thing? What is the next big event, show? Where can all of the audience see Mixed Dahlia Bell next?
On July 24th, I will be at Tomorrow Theater for Church.
Love that. I've heard of that show. I heard I'm hosting it.
Yeah. What are the chances?
Maybe I'll see you there.
Yeah.
It's very possible. Big thanks to this week's guest, Mixed Dahlia Bell. Follow her on her socials at mx.dahliabell. See us both live on July 24th at Church of the Seven Deadly Sins, Lust, at the Tomorrow Theater. You can get tickets at tomorrowtheater.org. Follow us at Success Stories PDX and learn more about me at briannawheeler.com. I'll talk at you next week. And until then, remember, success, it's what we make it.